A mother who's been on hunger strike for more than 130 days to campaign for her son to be freed from an Egyptian prison has taken her campaign once again to Downing Street. Pro-democracy activist Ala Abdel Fattah, who's a British and Egyptian citizen, has been in jail more or less continuously since 2014 and is Egypt's best-known political prisoner. He was meant to be released in September last year after a five-year sentence for spreading fake news and is a vocal critic of the Egyptian president. His UK-born mother, 68-year-old Leila Swaif, who lives in Streatham, has consumed nothing but herbal tea, black coffee and rehydration salts. Radio Jackie's Jackie Carr has been speaking with James Lynch from Fair Square. They take up the story for us.
You're a not-for-profit organisation that supports human rights worldwide. Would that be fair to say that?
Absolutely, yep.
You've been working with the family of Ala Abdel Fattah since 2022. So Ala is a British activist and writer, and he's been detained in Egypt for supposedly spreading fake news and supposedly criticising President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. He's completed his five-year sentence in September 2024, but is still being detained. He's actually been incarcerated for nearly a decade because he was detained for around 5 years, even pre-trial. And his mum, Leila, is trying to highlight his plight, and she's been on a hunger strike, I think for over 120 days now. So I presume she started on the day after he wasn't released. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, the day he should have come out of prison and didn't is when she started. That's absolutely right. So we're now, you know, more than 120 days in. And she's in that time, Leila's been, you know, she drinks black coffee and black tea, and she has kind of rehydration salts and water. But that's it. You know, so okay. She hasn't had a calorie effectively since then. Yeah.
We'll talk a bit about Leila a little bit later. What brought the case to your attention? Because you said you've been campaigning for him since 2022. So he must have been in there a lot longer before he came to your attention.
Yeah, that's right. Well, his is a case that, you know, I've personally been aware of actually even back, you know, more than a decade. You know, he was a famous political prisoner that after the Arab Spring, people might remember when the President Mubarak was overthrown. And you know, Ala's sort of imprisonment from about 2012 became a kind of, you know, a big cause for other activists in Egypt and across the region and the world. He, you know, he had brief moments of freedom, you know, between those times. In 2019, he was out for about 6 months. But even in those 6 months, he had to sleep every night in the police station. So he was really hardly released at all. The reason that I became involved in the case in Fair Square is that late 2021 was when Ala obtained his British passport. Now, he's always been, you know, entitled to a British passport, but I'm not sure he was fully really aware of that. He'd spent a lot of time in the UK.
Right.
But I think the family decision to say, well, actually, hang on, you know, you could have a British passport and that may help actually getting you out of prison. That was when I first became in touch with the family.
Right. And why do you think he's still being held?
Well, it's a great question. The Egyptian government refuses to count the time he served. You know, this is the sort of most people will know when you're on remand waiting to go on trial.
Yeah.
That is normally when, you know, you normally then take that into account at the end of when you finish your sentence. Now, of course, remember, he should never have been in prison for this. The actual reason he is in prison is because he was on Facebook in this brief period where he was out of prison. During the daytimes, and he went on Facebook and he saw a post about torture happening in prisons, and he didn't even post that post about torture. He just reposted it, retweeted effectively.
Yeah.
He shared it. So he shouldn't be in prison. And you know, even the world sort of human rights chief, the UN High Commissioner on Human Rights, has made very clear that he shouldn't be there. But if we assume that his sentence was legitimate, it should have ended on the 29th of September.
Yeah.
But they refused to count the 2 years he'd spent waiting to be tried. Now, of course, I mean, 2 years is a ridiculous amount of time to hold somebody when you're waiting to try them. You know, so particularly for a non-violent crime, you know, you should be on bail anyway, but you should certainly count it. But what that the Egyptian system holds people as long as it possibly can in pretrial detention. It's a kind of classic move. And then in this case, they seem to be refusing to count this pretrial detention, which every even Egyptian law says you have to, you know, so they're breaking their own laws in that regard.
And they're obviously seem to be trying to make an example of him, would you say?
I think there is an element of that. I think he, for whatever reason, I mean, rather absurdly, I think, you know, what he wants is to come to the UK where his son lives. His son lives in Brighton and is attending school there. And his all of his family are here. You know, he actually used to spend his holidays in Wimbledon, with his family there. He had cousins living in Wimbledon, and what he wants to do is come back to the UK and spend time with his son. I don't know whether Egypt thinks he's a great threat, that he would be somehow threatening while doing that. But there seems to be some sense in which this is a case they are very determined to kind of cause problems over. Yeah.
Give me an image of the sort of conditions he might be undergoing whilst in prison. If you go
Yeah.
into the FCDO office website for foreign nationals travelling to Egypt, the warnings they give you, they tell you that prison isn't very nice there. How is he? How is he coping? Do
Yeah.
you know anything about, has anybody seen him?
Well, I mean, one, the people who are not able to see him is the British government. So the Brit, you know, even though he has a British passport, you know, most people know you would expect if you're in prison with a British passport, you can get the embassy to come visit you, check on your welfare, you know, help you with legal issues and so on. The British embassy are not able to get in to see him. That they, it, despite three more than 3 years now, he's been a passport holder and they can't get to see him. His family get occasional visits, I think about one a month. But they have to do that. They only see him behind a screen and they have a, you know, one of those little phones. So, you know, even if two of the family go to see him, they have to one only one can speak through the phone. The they are, you know, his own son is separated from him behind a screen. And his son also has special needs, so found that really, really difficult. So for a long time, his son wasn't even able to visit him. In terms of conditions, he was held in a prison called Tora Maximum Security Prison, which was where the conditions were really brutal. He was held in isolation for you know many several years. You know, he barely saw another human. He wasn't allowed any objects in the room, any books, any pencils. Things have improved a little bit in the last few years. He's now held in a different prison. I think some of the international attention and campaigning has helped in that regard. But still, he hasn't seen the sunlight since 2019. You know, I think that's a really and one thing that's worth saying is, you know, a few years ago he went on hunger strike himself and was on hunger strike for a very long period, and he eventually went on to full water strike. And he collapsed, you know, and nearly died in that process. So yeah, so I think, you know, even where his physical conditions have improved a little bit due to the international pressure, you know, the overall sense that I think he worries he'll never be allowed out.
I'm sure it's really affecting his mental health. He must be feeling absolutely desperate. His case has been highlighted recently at the UN a few days ago, but it was sort of grouped amongst a lot of other sort of human rights issues they were lumping at Egypt, rather than being a case on its own to say, look, what can we do? How can we work together to get him released from prison? Where, I mean, the UN obviously are trying, and the next thing is obviously, I understand you, along with 12 other freedom of expression and human rights groups, have asked David Lammy to visit him because I think he's going to Egypt quite soon. Where do you get that?
Well, I mean, in terms of the UN, it's obviously positive that the UK raised his case, and I think importantly, it was the first time that they had said on the record he should have been released on the 29th of September, that he'd finished his sentence. They'd never said that before. So, you know, that was important. However, I think the fact that Britain was the only, alongside Luxembourg, were the only states to mention him was disappointing, that we would have wanted to see more states do that. Generally speaking, states just talk about the general issues, as you say. So yeah, that feels like, you know, good that he was raised, but I think we would have hoped for a bit more. I think in terms of In terms of David Lammy went, and I think, he didn't visit Allah. No, we know that he did talk to the Egyptian foreign minister at some length about
Right.
Allah's case. But yeah, still no progress in terms of getting access to him in prison. No. So I think we are concerned at the moment that Lele is now, beyond 120 days. And what we want to see is more involvement of the Prime Minister. That's really, really important. The Prime Minister's written some letters, but it needs to go beyond that.
So how, what sort of pressure can you put on Keir Starmer?
Well, Leila is obviously, is physically going to Downing Street every working day. She's outside, despite her hunger strike, despite her age, sort of, rain or shine or ice or snow, she's there. And obviously there's a lot of work going on in Parliament. We had 50 parliamentarians wrote to Keir Starmer this week to say, listen, we need you to pick up the phone. You have to speak to President Sisi. So I think Parliament and the media and that physical protest outside his office is the kind of some of the key ways I think we hope will engage the Prime Minister more proactively because, as I say, he's written to Sisi on the issue. He's written a reply to Leyla, but we are really looking for, considerably more. We need more than letters.
How much longer do you think she can carry on with this hunger strike? How old is she?
She's 68.
She's
Yeah.
68 and she must have lost masses of weight and she must be very
Yes.
weak. You
Yes.
wonder whether, she's going to have to collapse on the doorstep of number 10 to actually highlight how bad the situation is.
I mean, I think that, yeah, the strange thing about this situation is obviously we just have no idea about timescales, how long she can keep going. She's getting regular medical checks, she's taking readings every day. We just have no way of predicting that. I mean, and we obviously hope nobody wants it to come to some kind of drastic situation like that. But it's a very unknown where we're going with this, and I think she's an incredibly sort of strong person, sort of, in terms of her will and her stamina to continue with this. She's really clear that, she needs to see, really serious concrete progress, and that this is she, you know, she's not when people say, will you stop? She listens politely, but she wants to continue for her son.
Absolutely. And I think neither of us know what it must be like to have not eaten for many days. And
Yes.
there's an inner strength that, well, there is an inner strength, otherwise she wouldn't keep going. She would just,
Yes.
there must be a huge inner strength pushing her forward. So how do we move? I mean, we can tell your story on Radio Jackie.
Yeah.
Can people get a petition going to get this properly heard in Parliament? What more can people do to help Allah?
Yeah. Well, firstly, I mean, the campaign has a website, freeallah.net, which
Right.
has a lot of resources, has a lot of suggestions about things that can be done. I think probably the most helpful thing people can do actually is contact their MP and ask them to take action on this. People in South, so there'll be people, for example, in Southwest London who, some people might be constituents of Ed Davey, who obviously has the ability to
Yeah.
put the Prime Minister on the spot every
Yeah.
week. So I think asking your MP to speak about Allah in Parliament, to write to the Foreign Office, to write to the Prime Minister, this is the stuff that really can be really powerful, and make a big difference. We've seen over and over that when there has been real solid attention on the case in Parliament, it starts to make the motivate the government to do more.
How we can we incentivize our government to say, look, this guy's been incarcerated for long enough. Whether he's incarcerated rightly or wrongly, he's fulfilled his sentence and he deserves liberty. How do we go from here?
I think this government has made a big commitment, including in its manifesto, to address the needs of British nationals in detention overseas, and particularly ones who've been arbitrarily detained. So, basically imprisoned unfairly. They made a big commitment to do better than the last government on that. Obviously, people will remember Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe and the criticism the
Absolutely,
government took
yeah.
over that case. So following that case, there's been a lot of thinking about by the Labour Party about what more they could do. There's a promise, for example, to set up a new envoy for these cases. But the reality is, in the short term, this is a test case. This is a test case for the government to show if you are jailed, unlawfully overseas, we have got your back. We will pull out the stops. That's, I think, and freeing Alaa would be an enormously positive, a positive moment for this government, and would be welcomed around the world, really.
It would be. The thing that concerned me, I heard David Lammy speak about it in Parliament, saying it is now in the case of Egypt to do something about it. Well, I've done what I can. And he said the UK relationship with Egypt was multifaceted. And
Yes,
we I looked into
yes.
that. Yes, okay, Egypt have been very good in the Gaza crisis. We have great trading relations, with Egypt. Is there some way we can pressurize them gently to say this will be in both our interests for you to release Allah?
Yeah. Yes, I'm absolutely. I think those statements can be worrying. Yes, that sort of sound like, well, we've done everything we can. It's in the Egyptian hands now. At some level, there's a factually correct thing there that is, of course, it's only President Sisi who can, flick the switch. But the reality is that Egypt will not do this unless the British drive this forward and continue to drive this forward at the highest levels. So I think there has to be a continuous pressure on this government that this is their responsibility, this is their national, and talking about it as if it's sort of something that they can convey politely to the Egyptians and then walk away and hope it's resolved. Well, they didn't take that approach on Nazanin's case, did they?
No, they
They
didn't.
didn't say, well, this is ultimately in the Iranians'
No.
hands. I mean, that was never the answer. So yeah,
No.
we have to look at it in the same way.
Thank you for this afternoon.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your support. Really, really, really grateful.
A Foreign Office spokesman has told us our priority remains securing consular access to Mr. El Fattah and his release so he can be reunited with his family. We continue to raise his case at the highest levels of the Egyptian government. The Foreign Secretary has raised Mr. El Fattah's case with Egyptian Foreign Minister Abdel Latif on a number of occasions, most recently on the 14th of November.